This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Getting very close to November 8th. We're continuing to talk to candidates and, of course, covering the governor's race and a number of other races around the area as well. Non-affiliated candidate for governor, former state senator Betsy Johnson on with us again. Betsy, thanks for being on today. How are things going in the campaign?
Things are going well. We have completed one air tour of Oregon, and we're going out tomorrow again to barnstorm around the state. Things are going well. It's exciting that we're in the final countdown. I remain optimistic, and it's good.
And obviously, this has been a very unique campaign. You have waged a strong candidacy here. Three candidates, well-known around the state. And early on, you got a number of endorsements from both Republicans and Democrats, and it seemed like you were really trying to reach to both sides right from the beginning.
Well, that's been the whole premise of the campaign. I mean, I've said this on your show before. I'm going to say it again because it is our thesis. Imagine a governor who would say, I'm not going to sign a major bill into law. I'm not going to pass a budget into law or sign a budget into law. I'm not going to make appointments to boards or commissions without bipartisan input. It would transform the way we do business in this state. And I submit that's where most Oregonians are. They're sick of the paralytic partisan bickering. They want politicians who will make their lives better, fix stuff, and stop fighting with this paralyzing Republican-Democrat standoff that has yielded us tent cities, drugs, violence, an economy that is not good to job creators and people holding jobs. We've got to do something differently. And I submit having a nonpartisan governor, somebody who will get the best ideas from both sides and force them to work together, is exactly where Oregonians are. And that's the story we've been telling since I got into this race at the end of last year.
And as you've been out around the state, what's been the response to that thesis?
Very, very positive, because regardless of where one goes, and we were in 10 counties, well, we couldn't get into Josephine. The weather was too The weather was too bad last week. But regardless of where we went, we hear the same themes. Oregon cannot succeed if Portland is failing. Portland is failing. People have a proliferation of tent cities in rural communities. They need good jobs. They need daycare. They need schools that are teaching our kids fundamentals that make them competitive in a global economy. Oregonians want the same things. They want government that doesn't fight. They want government that stands up for them and is in their corner. And regardless of whether we were in Coos Bay or Gold Beach or John Day or Elgin, we heard the same story over and over and over again.
Now, one of the aspects of the campaign, and this is interesting, you're throughout the nation as well, but both the Drayson campaign and the Kotek campaign have been getting a lot of support from their respective parties. Has that impacted your efforts at all?
Well, it draws a very stark comparison between our campaigns. Drayson and Kotek are flying in political celebrities, and I'm literally flying around talking to Oregonians where they live and work. I don't think anything is more startling to make my case for why a non-affiliated governor is so important than watching this campaign in the last couple of weeks. Every week, a plane door opens at PDX and some political celebrity gets out. And whether it's the president or Bernie Sanders or whoever the hell it is, or the governor of Virginia, I don't need somebody flying in from the East Coast to tell me Oregon's got problems. And I'm not quite sure what Biden had to say. I know he had an ice cream and went home. But we're out literally talking to Oregonians where they live and work. I don't need a bunch of political celebrities to tell me about Oregon. I know about Oregon because I've been there.
Now, let's talk about just kind of work our way through some of the issues. You've been pretty outspoken about your thoughts about the crime situation in Oregon.
I have been. And it's all intertwined. Homelessness, crime, drug addiction. Yesterday, I went on a ride along with Portland Police Department, and it was fascinating. It was fascinating listening to businesses where we arrived at an alleged crime scene to find out how frustrated the businesses are that their windows are being broken out. I watched almost in tears with the compassion that the two officers that we were with approached a homeless woman sleeping in a doorway to ask her if she had adequate food and hydration and if she needed help. I watched with interest as the officers we were with took down a drug deal in Old Town, and when they arrested the bad guy, found out that he had outstanding parole violations. He went off to jail. I don't know how long he's going to stay there. But until we take our streets back, and there's accountability for bad behavior, this is just going to continue. And it's happening everywhere. It's theft out in rural places. It's farm vehicles, irrigation equipment. People are sick of it. Now, there are DAs that are prosecuting very vigorously, and I want to give them all my applause and appreciation. But I'll tell you, here in Multnomah County, we've got a DA who won't prosecute bad guys, and it is leading to the urban decay and the deterioration of Portland. So I would re-refer ballot measure 110, which is the measure that functionally legalized hard drugs. I would give that to the legislature and ask them to re-refer that to the voters. I would try to get a coordinated response to homelessness where we don't have units of government just fighting with each other about who's got the best ideas. I would enforce no camping rules or get cities to do that. I'd work much more closely with the mayors and the county commissioners to get the real life perspective of people that are closer to the electorate than Salem and Portland are. I would do a lot of things differently. I'd reorganize the executive branch of government so that they did it with Oregonians, not to Oregonians. I would expect can-do, want-to, will-do people to run those agencies and start with yes instead of starting with no. I'd get the regulatory agencies off Oregonians' backs. I don't care whether you make wood chips, silicon chips, potato chips, cow chips, fish and chips. I want the government out of your pocketbook and off your back. I want government to help people, not be the enemy of Oregonians.
I don't remember where I heard this. It was one of our national programs, I believe, in the last couple of weeks. And Oregon is picking up a lot of national interest that it normally doesn't get because of the governor's race, but also because of the crime and homelessness situation. Probably best illustrated to folks from out of the state by what's going on in Portland. But one of the commentators was talking about a video they'd seen with someone and a number of different types of drugs there and a straw used to take the drugs. And they thought it was rather ironic that the one thing that was actually illegal in the video was the straw.
The plastic straw. Yeah, I mean, you cannot give a better anecdote than that. You can carry around a baggie full of fentanyl enough to wipe out half the town, and that's okay. That's personal use. I love your straw example. I may steal that without attribution. I think that's great. But that's how weird we've gotten. Many downtowns are now open-air drug markets, and then you in the southern part of the state have the added burden of growing some of the best dope in the world, and you've got some very serious criminal behaviors that are happening, water theft, indentured servitude of people, improper pesticide applications, criminal behavior in some of the counties, Jackson, Josephine, open murder cases. It's a mess, and Oregon has gotten this this reputation as a pretty laissez-faire place about drugs, and until we get a grip on that, we're going to continue to poison our kids and have Oregon be a magnet for exactly the kind of folks we don't want here.
Let's talk about the business side of things. You have a business, or your husband has it now. You've been in business for a long time, and I know you've talked about a desire to see state government interact with business differently.
Oh, I have. Nothing drove that home more clearly than COVID, where you had OSHA, the Oregon Health and Safety Administration, swaggering around businesses with OLCC threatening people's licenses. I believe that Oregon could have taken a more educational and corrective approach rather than this punitive approach and gotten the same result. We all wanted employees and customers to be safe, but if somebody's mask isn't pulled up just tight enough and they threaten their liquor license and they threaten them with fines, we all ought to have been working together during a period of time when less was known about COVID than is known now. And instead, government took this episodic, heavy-handed, contradictory approach to passing out information and then dealing with it on a regulatory basis. It damn near crippled the business economy, and we're still struggling to try to come back to some semblance of normal.
What about from the high-tech sector in Oregon, which has always been an important part of what comes out of the state, the Intel situation?
Well, that was shocking to me as an Oregonian and as a former elected leader in this state. I had the opportunity to talk to the manager of Intel Oregon, and during the course of our meeting, the question was posed to him, what could have been done to have kept this from happening? And the this that I'm referring to is Intel taking a big piece of their business and making a huge investment in the state of Ohio. And the answer was, somebody in the governor's office should have answered the damn phone. Intel had been sending up signals that they needed land for expansion, and nobody from Kate Brown on down did anything. And as a result, Intel said, we got to do what's good for the company, and we're out of here. We didn't even get up to bat when Micron was looking at making a multi-billion dollar investment, and that went to upstate New York, because we didn't have the responsive, nimble, get-to-yes attitude we needed. We didn't have the tools in our economic development toolbox. We didn't treat that opportunity as though it were a welcome opportunity. I would be an economic development champion. I have done that for the years I've been in the legislature. I've got a formidable track record that shows when you care, when you act like it makes a difference, you help fight through the regulatory burden. Businesses want to stay here and they want to come here. And that is exactly the kind of governor that I would be.
Let's talk about the area of education. Obviously, the whole COVID pandemic brought a lot of wrinkles that nobody could have anticipated really going into things. Coming from where we are now and moving forward, what changes would you like to see in how the state deals with education in the state?
Elect a new governor and get the Oregon Education Association out of the governor's office. Kate Brown and Tina Kotek have taken their orders from the union bosses that have run the Oregon Education Association for too long. Our standards have declined, and every time our kids couldn't make the standards in tests, we lowered the standards. Kate and Tina pushed through a bill that made a high school graduation certificate graduation diploma look like a participation certificate. We ought to be lifting up our standards. We ought to be giving more attention to parents and classroom teachers and local school boards to help set standards for schools and to dictate curricula. We shouldn't be allowing our schools to become places of indoctrination versus education. I would take a much more generous view of helping parents make choices that are the proper education choices for their kids, whether it's charter schools or online or homeschooling. I would give parents much more opportunities to get a good fit for their kids. And that's certainly not to say that I don't support public education. Public education used to be the great equalizer in this country, that a kid, no matter what their economic status, their family socioeconomic status, could go as high and as far as they wanted based on a standard education that they received in the public school system. That has all changed as the schools have gotten more and more interested in politics and less interested in trying to help make sure our kids can compete at any level, anywhere, for entry into university, into career technical programs, into career programs, or certificates. We need to raise standards. We need to expect the best and the highest from our kids. And then put in all kinds of remedial opportunities to make up for the 2 years of education that we cheated our kids out of. By closing kids out of schools, we did enormous damage to them. Imagine if you had a first grader who needed to try to be reading proficient by grade three, and they spent the first grade and the second grade locked out of their classroom. We know, because we're getting test scores now that show the academic damage. What we don't know is how much socio-emotional damage we've done, or how much mental health damage we've done by locking kids out of their classrooms. So we need to hear from classroom teachers and parents and local school boards what the state can do to help them bolster and remediate the loss of learning that occurred when Kate Brown and Tina shut kids out of the schools for 2 years.
Do you feel like we, given all the changes in workforce needs and less of an emphasis on a four-year degree for some students, do you feel like we're adequately funding the community colleges in Oregon?
No, we're not adequately funding the community colleges, nor are we funding some of the trade opportunities. I'm working on a thing called OMIC, the Oregon Manufacturing Innovation Center, that is doing research and development in conjunction with our powerhouse research universities, OSU, PSU, Oregon Tech. We're feeding down into the community colleges through Portland Community College and driving that innovation down into the grade schools and the high schools to try to make sure that we can interest kids in career technical and in really some of the incredibly sophisticated techniques of manufacturing that require experience and hands-on learning rather than a four-year degree. I have likened community colleges to being the fire department when the economy crashes. Our community colleges need to be strong. They need to be coordinated. There needs to be a degree of continuity between community colleges and universities, and certainly down into the lower grades. So we need to value our community college system and do what we can to help bolster them financially, as well as encouraging their placement within communities. When I was in the legislature, I had three community colleges in three different communities, and it was astonishing the attitude of the community when they had a community college there. So that's not to say that we need to slice up a thin pie more ways, but we need to make sure that our community colleges are adequately situated financially and in other ways to help address that continuum of education from primary grades through university, if that's what the student needs.
As you go through this race, if you were elected, if you're elected, walking in the door and taking over, how different will it be to govern and not be in a political party?
Well, the good news is that I know an awful lot about the legislative process, and I still have bipartisan contacts. I think that there is a hunger among legislators, regardless of whether they're an R or a D, to work together. Nobody wants to represent any part of Oregon that is failing, and failing with drugs or homelessness or crime. And I think having a non-affiliated governor saying, I want the best ideas from both sides, and we're going to work together and get us out of this partisan gridlock, is something that legislators would welcome. They could use the mean old non-affiliated governor as an excuse to say, look, Governor Betsy's making us work together. Isn't this awful? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, when they're actually being able to solve problems together and everybody goes home and takes credit for it. So there are lots of things I do on day one. I'd begin by writing a governor's budget that reflects the needs of rural Oregon the same way that attention has been paid to urban Oregon. I would reorganize the reporting structure in the governor's office. Unlike Christine Drazen, who would fire everybody on the first day, I'd want them to come in and give me a status report on their agency, and then give me a rational reason for why they should stay on. I think it's reckless to just go out and issue pink slips on the first day. I'd at least want to choke out every agency head what's the next crisis that the paper's going to report on that the governor should know about. And I can give you one as a prime example. We're going to have a growing problem with water in this state. And I have just learned that Water Resources, whose old head just headed out the door, which I personally think is a good thing, that they're going to stop issuing water permits until they get some things inside the agency resolved. Well, what are we supposed to do? Put up a sign that says business need not apply? to either come here or expand. And no, we're not going to build any more houses in this community because the agency can't get it together. I would do a whole bunch of stuff differently. Mostly it would be an attitude shift that we're not just marching in place, we're marching forward, and that there's a new sheriff in Dodge, and we're going to run state government for the benefit of Oregonians, not to be an adversarial pushback for Oregonians.
As you talk with folks around the state, whether they're progressive, Democrats, conservative, Republicans, are you seeing more dissatisfaction with each of the two major parties?
Oh, yes. I mean, Oregonians are united in their sense of failure of government to respond to them. That is universal. That's around the state. Regardless of where your town is, nobody wants people camping on the streets. Nobody wants your kids exposed to lethal doses of fentanyl. The Oregonians want to know that government is on their side and is listening to them and is working with them. I just met with a group of business owners this morning, and they are lamenting the fact that in order to get government's attention, you got to either know somebody's phone number or, I mean, the government is so siloed right now that they run you from one place to the next place to the next place. Nobody owns the problem. They all own their little sliver of the solution, and that frequently serves nobody. We've got people going around to the tents in Portland offering clean needles. Well, maybe a person doesn't need a clean needle, and so the clean needle guys move on to the next tent. And when does the next help come? We are not coordinated. We are not united in defining the problem statement, defining the deliverables, defining the budget, defining who the people are that are going to be held accountable for the deliverables. And if those people can't get the job done, get new people. Too many little fiefdoms, not enough service.
All right, just about out of time. Give folks your website address.
The website is runbessierun.com. I would be honored to have your vote. I think together we can change the way Oregon does business. This is a unique and historical run where you've got three women running, and I believe one, me, who can help bring the state back together again, because I know this state well. I have a servant's heart. I'm not running for the next job. I want to fix stuff, and I think that's what I can do as governor.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.